and all, even put them on. We're gonna go get it straight.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Narstool Podcast.
Welcome to the Narstool Podcast. I'm Shannon O'Grady, your science nerd and research ranger. And we've got J-Mo here, Jason Morgan, human performance nerd, bike enthusiast, aspiring ski bum. J-Mo, I've been a little bit under the weather. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice.
I kind of like it. I was like, what were you doing all weekend?
Yeah.
Some concerts, late nights at the bar. What
we got going? You know, partying.
Sweet.
No, you know, my little guy had been sick for a couple weeks and I thought I was going to escape the sickness, but I kind of, as he was starting to get better, I kind of kicked up my training because I got Worlds in a couple weeks. And I think just that increased effort, maybe a little bit less sleep than I should get. Immune system was not as powerful as it usually is. And it got me.
It got you.
Yeah.
How are we feeling now?
I'm feeling better. Yeah. I mean, I always joke with it in my house because, like, I'm, you know, you're a man. I don't know if you succumb to the man sickness, but my husband sure does. And
the man sickness?
I mean, we could be sick at the same time. And he's like, I love you, Tommy Chandler. But he's like, oh, I'm so sick on the couch, like blanket over him, you know, can't do anything. And I'm like, sickness is a state of mind, babe. Don't give in. Like, power through. You got it. Like, if you give in, you're going to feel worse. So, you know, we both got sick. He might have been a little more dramatic about it.
I feel like the roles are reversed. Oh, there it is. The roles are reversed in my house. Like, I'm never allowed to say anything because my wife has had two natural childbirths, so nothing I can ever go through is ever painful or sick or anything.
Yes.
But I subscribe to the sickness as a state of mind. So if you just ignore it and keep going, you're not actually sick.
I don't ignore it. I just don't lean into it. I guess that's like, I'm just kind of like, well, the more I'm like, and I think a fever is a different case. Like if you've got a high fever and you feel like crap, like that's different. I was lucky enough. He did have a fever one day. I didn't have a fever at all last week. So.
Sounds to me like Mr. Tommy Chandler is just better at taking cues from his body and giving his body
well said, the rest
and recuperation that it is asking for when you're sick.
Flu hurts.
I have to say my kids were like, what's wrong with dad? Aren't you sick too?
See?
I was like, yeah, from the mouths of babes.
My question though, like knowing you and talking through the toe incident with your injured toe where you did nothing to help the toe, are you doing it's anything better. To help expedite the recovery from this respiratory thing? Or are you just ignoring it?
I didn't exercise as much.
Okay.
I didn't do my usual Wire Tuesday.
Okay.
So I did take a couple days off, didn't go to jiu-jitsu also because I didn't want to get people sick. I did increase the vitamin D and the fluids, tried to get a little bit more sleep. But as everybody knows, when you're like hacking up crap, that can sometimes interfere with quality sleep. But yeah, so I did those things. Those are typically like good hydration, vitamin D, rest. I feel like those are the...
Yeah. Okay. Well, you did something this time, so that's good. More than our previous bouts of...
I feel like I've set the bar pretty low with you.
I'm the same way. Like I am, if something's wrong or something's broken, I just kind of ignore it and keep going and just, you know, trudge through it. So, but I'm glad you're on the up. I do appreciate the voice. I like the bar voice. It's our Zoom meetings have been fun. it's a good time. And I'm glad Tommy is on the up as well because I know the man flu can be devastating.
Severe.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to roll that into our guest this week. We have Corinna Perkins, registered dietitian, badass athlete, sports and performance nutrition coach, and way, way more. Corinna, welcome to the Narstool.
Thank you guys for having me. And Shannon, I've just made some garlic soup last night for my friends.
I remember your secret garlic soup recipe. How many cloves of garlic? It's like a crap ton.
I used four bushels of garlic. And I just
had
two onions and ginger and spices. I actually went out to my garden. I'm not a very impressive oh my gosh, my green thumb is not very impressive, but I do have rosemary. So I put a bunch of rosemary.
Nice.
And then I brought,
your sourdough?
I brought my friend a sourdowh loaf and
a
and the garlic soup. So if she's not ready to go today, I don't know.
I mean, you're inspiring me. If it's been so hot in Salt Lake, that like soup is the last thing I want. But usually that's my go-to when I'm not feeling great. Is like right away, garlic, ginger, some kind of soup concoction where those two things are the main ingredients.
Have either of you ever messed around with the fermented garlic in the honey garlic?
You and I have talked about this
before.
Yeah,
one of my hippie friends turned me onto it. It's pretty awesome. Have you done that at all?
Is it kind of like pickled garlic that you just kind of put on?
Yeah, you take like a mason jar with raw honey and throw a bunch of cloves of garlic in there and close it and then like burp it every day because, you know, as it ferments, the CO2 is going to blow off. Mm. And when it stops burping, it's good to go and you can just eat the cloves of garlic. And they're actually pretty good. And then you can use the honey and tea or whatever. And it's amongst the hippie crowd that it's, you know, helps boost immune function. And it'll also help, you know, keep your distance from other people so you don't get them sick. But
it's a vampire effect.
But it, I don't know. It might be
that
something to it.
That sounds delicious, Jason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love garlic, so.
I know. I'm going to have to try that, too. I mean, Corinna, you and I go back a little bit. It's been, I'm so excited to have you on. You haven't been in Salt Lake for a minute, so we haven't got to play as much, but it's been amazing to watch your journey as of late. And you have a little one on the way, which is super awesome. But I want to start by talking about your background in athletics and nutrition. So how you got to become a registered dietitian, and sports and training is such a big part of your life. So walk us through your history there as well.
Yeah, no, I think my family is a great place to start, because I recognize just how much they have shaped me into, you know, my character, who I am today, but also my interests. And so I grew up in a very athletic family, on a horse farm with three older brothers. So my childhood was just very much like outdoor oriented. You know, being the youngest and the only girl played a big role into like what I had to do to hang out with my brothers. And my dad's an Olympian. He was an equestrian in 3-day eventing, so dressage, jumping, and cross country. My mom was always active, running all the time. So she really spurred my love for, like, running was probably my first love aside from soccer. And my mom was great. She signed me up for, my brothers and I are, there's four of us, and we're all within, from top to bottom, 3 years of each other. So we were.
Whoa. My mom is an Olympian as well.
My mom is an Olympian mom, exactly. So she had four kids under three at one time, and I truly can't imagine doing that. Also, just side tangent, but my twin brother and I, so I say I'm the youngest, but only by 2 minutes with one of my brothers. But he makes that very clear to me. But she went full term with us. Like, we were 7-pound twins, like, each.
Whoa. So
she's also a marathon birther, apparently, or Olympic birther. So yeah, she's something else. She's
14 pounds a baby plus all the others. Man.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a good, I think a good setup for who and what I was surrounded by growing up. And I really think all of these elements played into, you know, the competitive drive I have, the love for pushing myself physically and mentally. And you know, my mom was not trying to go to a bunch of different soccer practices growing up, so she just signed all of us up pretty much on the same team, and that ended up just being me on all boys soccer teams. And I really enjoyed it. It felt like I was just kind of at home, because, you know, being home with all my brothers and then their friends. And so that was a good, like, gritty start into my childhood, and also just trying to keep up with my brothers, because if I couldn't do that, I couldn't hang out with them. So so that kind of led into sports that I got into throughout school and through high school. On the nutrition side of things, I really didn't, and I look back and honestly, I'm so grateful for this, but I really had no concept of food. You know, I feel like in today's age, like, I have a lot of high schoolers reaching out to me and or their parents and asking to help kind of introduce nutrition to, you know, to their kids. And, you know, on one hand, I think that's incredibly valuable. But on the other hand, I also think about, like, gosh, think about all the messaging that kids are inundated with around food these days and diet culture. And I feel really blessed that I didn't really have that concept. Like, I didn't see my parents were never dieting. They just had really nutritious meals. They home cooked everything. We were, dinners and meal times were like a whole family affair. We all, you know, four kids, you're not, my mom was not just making the food and saying, hey guys, it's dinner time. Like, it was all hands on deck to contribute. And that was really like my foundation of nutrition. I knew that it was, that it helped, you know, nourish my body and allowed me to support me throughout all my athletic ventures. But it really wasn't until college where I dove into the play on nutrition and, you know, in my athletics.
And you and I have talked a little bit because you're a Virginia girl as well. You went to Virginia Tech. And if I remember correctly, you did play soccer in high school, but you started triathlon in college, right?
Yes. Yes. I started off with club lacrosse. I loved lacrosse in high school, but yeah, transitioned to triathlon.
Was it anything about like the switch to a sport where, I mean, obviously fueling is really important in soccer and lacrosse too, but sometimes in triathlon where it's like single individual sport, obviously you can go longer where maybe the nutrition piece becomes more critical, or how you feel during the event. Was it anything about switching to that, or was it just completely on its own that you found kind of the intersection of nutrition and sports?
Yeah, no, triathlon was such a, like, you're right. It was so much more volume, because you couldn't just do, you know, it wasn't just like, all right, lacrosse practice an hour a day and then you're done. It was like, I got to learn how to swim. First of all, I joined the team. Thankfully, I'm so grateful to the Virginia Tech club triathlon team, because they were so welcoming of like, hey, if you don't know how to, you've never had any formal swimming, like, come join us. If you're like an elite level triathlete and just want a place to, you know, and a team to be on and compete with, like, we want you to. So I was like, you know what? I've never swam a lap in my life, like freestyle. I just kind of, you know, lounge by the pool and maybe doggy paddle a little bit across. But I had no formal swim training. And, you know, I'm 18, 19 years old at this point. And I was like, well, we're going to learn how to swim. And so I would show up, and every practice was optional, but it was like 6 a.m. swim practices. And then if you wanted to get on the bike, which that was pretty new to me, like, you know, but, you know, we would have bike rides in the afternoons, and then there'd be runs, optional runs throughout the week and track sessions. And so there was a level of like volume that I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't support this without like really taking a new approach to eating. And this was coming off of kind of being at like my lowest body weight and just running a ton and playing lacrosse, and had no, you know, that was really the extent of it. So this really like reshaped my approach to fitness and nutrition and strength training too. Like, honestly, at that time I jumped into triathlon training, but also discovered strength training and CrossFit. So it was a lot coming at me at once.
Yeah. I was going to ask when CrossFit or when strength training came into the picture, because I think folks that know you now, you know you from your days in CrossFit, very successful days, as well as your days in Spartan, where obviously strength is a big part of those events. I mean, those events are always interesting because they also bring in endurance and there's some technicality in it. And you have done a little jujitsu, because for the Spartan stuff, there was some wrestling. But was it kind of that early strength training in triathlon that got you excited about it? And then you were excited to pursue that even more. And that was about the time CrossFit was becoming popular too, right?
Yeah, I actually took a job as a trainer at my school. Like, I was leading some of the strength training classes, but like before that, you know, just learning about strength training, I had a couple guy friends who kind of took me under their wing to teach me just lifting in general. And then I did, you know, because I majored in nutrition, food and exercise, there were some cool opportunities through my major to intern at a CrossFit gym and like learn a bit more. And so between like my own fitness, working as a trainer, doing an internship for some of my classes, and then the triathlon team, it was kind of this perfect, honestly, I'm very grateful that it all came together, because I felt like the strength training gave me that component of, you know, that side of fitness. Whereas, you know, triathlon was so much endurance related that I felt the two really help elevate the other. Now we're kind of seeing a lot of hybrid fitness and hybrid sport. And I felt like at that time I was kind of doing that without really labeling it as, you know, hybrid fitness, I guess.
Yeah. That was my question with triathlon, which is, you know, ultra endurance, long, long bouts of training, long bouts of, you know, keeping your heart rate in a certain zone, and then flipping the script into more power focused training, you know, CrossFit, explosive type 2 muscle fibers, you know, those can be kind of combating ideologies. And how did your body respond to doing both at the same time? Or would you periodize out throughout the year? Like, how did you balance all that?
Yeah, Jason, there was no periodization. This was Corinna just going full bore of like, I love this fitness stuff, And I mean, we'll jump ahead at some point, but like, it was not sustainable. Like, it was one of those things where I'm like, maybe I'll take a rest day, but I just love everything. And like, you know, there were so many great opportunities through Virginia Tech, like all the different classes they offered at the rec center, and all the different options I had with my team, that I was so new to it all that it was just so exciting. My body was responding in a way, like I put on a good amount of like muscle mass during that time. And from an eating standpoint, a lot of it was just like, I was so hungry because I was doing so much that it was just eat, get lots of calories in. I had a really good foundation from, you know, my upbringing and just my family helping teach me how to cook and prepare meals at that time. And the dining halls at Virginia Tech are amazing, so I didn't struggle that hard with how to get enough food in. But no, Jason, it was very it was very, very much trying to do it all at once. And if I, you know, if I were to go back, I mean, I wouldn't change anything, because it's all led me to where I am now. And those experiences, for better or worse, have all been a part of my journey. But definitely wouldn't recommend that approach to someone going through that if I were working with them.
Corinna, and you came out west because of the sports dietitian program at the U, correct?
Yes. Well, there was a little gap in between, a couple years between finishing undergrad and going to grad school out in Utah. But during that time, it was a lot of, I got into obstacle course racing. I guess I started, you could say, my professional career, short-lived, but in obstacle course racing during my senior year of college. And so I had a pro team contract coming out of college and was racing a ton my senior year. So it was less triathlon. Triathlon was kind of like junior year and really good training for me. But when I discovered obstacle course racing, that kind of took front and center. But as I as I started competing a lot on like a higher level, with against a lot of people who are older than me, had a lot of time in proper training and sport. I realized that even though I was studying nutrition and exercise in college, like there was not that specific sports nutrition application. So I was doing a lot of training that was not periodized, that wasn't super smart. It was just a lot of volume. And my nutrition was more so focused around like just nutrition for health and general health and well-being. And I realized like, I don't really know how I'm supposed to be fueling for all this, you know, for sports and performance. Like this seems a little bit different. What I'm doing and trying to apply is different than what I was like the general foundations I was learning in school. So I was like, I want to go back. I want to focus in sports nutrition and performance and become a registered dietitian, since that was I just had like the core classes in undergrad.
I think when you're young, you're primed. You can just throw shit at the wall and you're gonna get better. You're gonna get stronger, faster, more like your body can handle the volume of training and just the random bullshit and just eat a lot. You're good. Like we joke. Yeah. When I was younger, I could destroy myself in the gym, go for a 25-mile bike ride, eat a burrito and wake up and feel great. And it's like, can't do that after the age of like 23, 24.
Right. Or it catches up to you at some point. Yeah, it's like, I'm not getting any better. Yeah. And I feel really tired now. So
yeah, you got to dial it in at some point.
I'm curious, Karina, just with timing, like I think, I mean, we've all, did you have a CrossFit phase, Jason? Mm-mm. Okay. Well, I had a CrossFit phase at Ute early on. And I think when I think of early CrossFit days, I think of paleo, you know, like there, the was one of the fitness movements that had this interesting parallel nutrition movement with it. And I'm curious, like, if, I mean, even I, with my, you know, nutrition knowledge at that point, kind of fell a little bit prey to that ideology early on. And I'm curious if you fell into that category, this whole like clean eating, you know, can't have these things, or if you, your kind of nutrition background, having taken it in college and what you talked about just growing up and eating a lot of whole foods and cooking, were able to kind of stay on the periphery of that.
I think I stayed on the periphery, but like, you know, I vividly remember when like kind of, again, my senior year / first year out of undergrad, where like it was like a big thing, like a lot of people were just kind of avoiding bread, or like it was kind of like more of the gluten-free early stages of that movement. And so I just remember being like, you know, I'd be training so much throughout the day, and then like all of a sudden I'm just like trying to minimize my bread consumption, or like, you know, eating avocado as part of a snack and then going for a run and then like throwing it up during the run. Yeah. And being like, why am I throwing it? Like, that's weird. You know, just things that seem so obvious now about, you know, what types of foods to focus on, especially to support high intensity output, and just not really like having no kind of connection between the two. But yeah, I was always a little bit wary of like the fad trends, especially because that was something that we covered a lot in our coursework, was just kind of like, hey, anything like super extreme, we want to be mindful of. But I guess, you know, similarly, there were definitely things where I was like, oh, should I just avoid this, or should I cut this out, instead of, you know, that just seemed to be like kind of the, what a lot of people were doing, was like, what can we avoid, and avoiding added sugars. And there was definitely a phase of that where it's like, oh, shouldn't buy anything that has added sugar in it. And so not paleo to that extent, but just clean eating for sure. Like there was that element.
Yeah. It's been good to see more and more people put an emphasis on how bad orthorexia can be, like this like fascination or obsession with clean eating that becomes unsustainable and becomes in some ways disordered eating in and of itself. And paleo, to me, it's like, I don't think the idea of it is wrong, but it's that obsession with it where you're like labeling foods as good and bad. And like, what is clean? Does that mean everything else is dirty? Like just this weird dynamic that it sets up with people that try to adopt this style of eating. It doesn't seem sustainable. So it's been good to see more and more people talk about that with time, I think.
And I think too, like it just limits, you know, something like paleo, which is it limits what you're able to consume. And the more restrictions you have, the more challenging it is to get all the nutrients and calories that you need, especially for our high performance individuals. So I see that a lot in my clients. You know, definitely today is just a lot, this hyper fixation on this clean style of eating or healthy eating. And they're just under fueled at the end of the day, because, and they're running into roadblocks of like what to eat, because they've restricted their, you know, their food options, or limited their food options so much, where now it's like such an additional chore to get calories in.
I'm curious your thoughts. Like, we all focus on like, you know, performance nutrition, like perform, but food is a cultural and human interaction piece, right? Like you said earlier, dinner at your house was a big family event, and people are getting so tunnel visioned on, like you said, restricted eating. We're cutting this out. Like you're missing out on being a human being. You're missing out on social and interacting with people and going to restaurants and having a good time. Like, I think people are getting too focused on that stuff and missing out on a really important part of, like I said, just being a human.
Right. And I think a lot of what I try to address with individuals that I work with is like, where are these beliefs coming from? Like, have these been ingrained in your mind through childhood or early on? Or is this more just like this inundation of nutrition misinformation out there and everyone kind of speaking about nutrition because everyone eats, and so feeling like they've got some form of credibility there to talk about it to the masses. But I really try to address, like, you know, what are some of these misconceptions or these food beliefs that my clients have, and really trying to undo them or help them realize like this actually hasn't been serving you, or this is, you know, under false, you know, pretenses, and just trying to unlearn things and then reapply things, and helping them through like their own experiences of eating something and then seeing how that, you know, how it either doesn't impact their health in the negative way that they thought, or their body composition, or seeing how, oh wow, this, now that I've added this in, like, I feel so much better. And so helping them walk through that journey of like undoing all of those former beliefs so that they can, yeah, and sit down with their family and enjoy a meal, or go out to dinner and not feel like it's sabotaging all of their goals. So that's definitely a huge part of it. I don't want anyone missing out on living life because of food restrictions.
We are living in an era of Instagram experts, and is there one movement out there that particularly gets under your skin and drives you nuts?
I feel like there's just so much demonizing of certain foods. I mean, Shannon touched on that just earlier, where it's just like, you know, people just hounding on like one food item. It's like, we know that with nutrition, there's not one thing that's going to just kill or sabotage your nutrition goals or your health. It's what you're doing the majority of the time. It's what you're consistently focused on. So I really, and I think a lot of people just fixate on like these messages around like this one food group or this one food item or type of food. And it's just so interesting to me that ends up being like a core staple of how in some certain individuals like navigate the food realm, as opposed to just kind of keeping more of a balanced approach. But balance isn't sexy, apparently. So we of course people just grab onto the little things here and there but it can make a big difference as far as, you know, hindering their relationship with food and their long-term health and sustainability around foods.
Yeah, it was cool to hear you talk a little bit about how you work with the individuals and athletes that you program for, because it does seem like nutrition is less of like, here's a meal plan or here's some recipes. And it's, like you said, backing up and figuring out where certain viewpoints or certain behaviors and habits around food were built, and then figuring out a good way to help someone work through that and find a new way of interacting or thinking about or looking at food and nutrition that's sustainable and healthy in a way to move forward. Like, how much of what you do is really focused on that versus actual food recommendations?
Yeah, so much. Because I think a lot of people inherently like eat fairly like, or have some really solid foundations underneath it all. It's just there's a lot of things that end up shifting. I think a lot of people know how to eat fairly well balanced, but where that imbalance comes from is a lack of structure or routine in their day around nutrition. And so it's like, you know, they feel like they just have no they're acting impulsively around food, but usually that's from like an upstream decision that they made. Like, maybe it's like not eating breakfast. And so then by the time they get to lunch, like, they're going out for fast food because they're so hungry and that's what is around them. And so it's like, they know that that's probably not the best thing for them, but they've waited to a point, like, you know, nutrition was such an afterthought for in their day, or, you know, that meal, they didn't never gave it much thought. And so they're just they're falling victim to like their circumstance and being like, well, I'm hungry and this is what I have available to me. And so that's usually what ends up like making a lot, or, you know, you get to a point of hunger where you're just, you didn't go in prepared. Now your body's just in this, like, if I see it, I want it, I'm going to eat it, instead of kind of starting off with some sound choices to start the day and eating kind of more consistently to support their energy needs at that time, instead of playing catch up. And with my athletes in particular, this is so huge. It's like, let's get your body some fuel. Let's get your body proper nutrition as it needs it, or even before it needs it throughout the day, so that you can elevate your performance and your capacity to do work or to think clearly or act swiftly. And instead of draining, you know, working in a deficit all day and then backfilling it, and like, you're not going to feel anywhere like remotely as energized in that type of situation. And you're always like one step behind, essentially.
I jumped on the intermittent fasting train for a minute and I felt that way. I felt like absolute dog shit. Like, operating in a deficit. And then by the time lunchtime came around, I was so ravenous. I'd be like, holy, brah, eat everything in sight. And like, well, that just undid the whole point of intermittent fasting. So I don't know. Right. That resonates with me. Like, don't try to play catch up later in the day, especially if you're training hard. It's not a recipe for success.
Or if you are, you know, for people who maybe intermittent fasting does work for them or can work for them. It's like, I'm a much bigger advocate of starting that time window earlier in the day and then kind of cutting things off. And again, I rarely recommend intermittent, any type of long period of fasting for my athletes and performers in particular. But if I were to do it, it would be front loading and, you know, having an earlier cutoff later in the day.
Yeah. Corinna, I think a lot of people, and this comes, I think, along with this wave of folks looking for this magic pill, is they're looking for a quick fix, or they want to see changes instantaneously, where I think a lot of us know that, especially if changes in body composition or weight loss are the goal, right? Like you said, the less sexy, consistent stuff is really the stuff that works. That's often based in behavior change. And with those types of things, you see more of like small changes over time. And that can be hard to jump on, you know, the bandwagon of, because quick changes are reinforcing. So when someone comes to you and they're like, I want to lose weight, how do you set them up for success with the less sexy route of just being consistent and balanced?
No, it's such a, it's a challenge for a lot of people to accept a slower pace, as you were saying, but that's where I think performance, and I use the term, you know, technically I'm a sports dietitian. That's our, my credentials or my specialty subpopulation from like just being a registered dietitian. But why I use the performance umbrella, and I choose that word intentionally, because performance can be so encompassing of beyond sports. It can be in the workplace. It can be as a parent. It can just be feeling more energized. It could be as a first responder, or you know, for our men and women in service. And so it's like there's hopefully with anyone, even if their goal is weight loss, you know, that there's something else driving their motivation in life or driving their goal to lose weight, whether it's, yeah, I just want to keep up with my kids, or it's, I want to be able to do some of these cool things that my friends are doing, or I want to, you know, I want to be able to go to all these places and access areas that like I can only get to by foot or by biking. And I just don't have the fitness for that. So how I like to approach it is like really helping individuals find a goal or understand part of what's driving them beyond just the weight. And so if we can have something else, like if weight can be the byproduct, weight loss can be a byproduct of this pursuit of better fueling and feeling better and making, like taking notice of all these positive changes outside of just what the scale is saying or showing, it's so much more rewarding, and it allows people to kind of stay in it for a longer period of time than just like, oh, we're watching the scale today and it went up and then it went down again, and or just changed by a decimal point. Like that is just painstaking. I never like focusing on solely that.
I absolutely love that. Like anchoring the true reason to something that's life-changing. Cause if it's always going to be what that number is on the scale, then that in and of itself is like you said, it's setting the person up for this roller coaster of emotion that may quickly have them, you know, back to where they started. And so anchoring that whole thing in something that is more tangible and has a larger impact on their life than what, you know, their body mass is. That's rad.
Yeah. And as coaches too, I'll just add one more thing, Shannon. Like as coaches too, I think it's important to challenge our clients to see things from that angle instead of just like, okay, I want you to weigh in every day. And then here's, I want you to record your food intake. It's like, there is so much more to us and our well-being than, you know, those two things. And I think really helping people understand or see all the things, you know, see all the positive manners in which nutrition, quality nutrition can affect our health and well-being, like outside of the scale. I think that's so important, because if we're, you know, if I'm having that impact or showing that to my clients, like now they're seeing value in investing in their nutrition beyond, you know, beyond just the physical appearance aspect. And, you know, that's stuff that's going to stay with them for the rest of their lives and hopefully get passed down to their, you know, kids or their friends and family around them. So, yeah.
Love that, Corinna. Okay. So I want to go back to you because we, you know, we talked about soccer and lacrosse and we talked about triathlon, your kind of transition to more obstacle course racing. You did some serious CrossFit for a minute. And then when you say obstacle course racing, I don't know if Spartan was a thing that early, but you got pretty serious into Spartan. And then you've also more recently transitioned into tactical games. And then I've been super impressed to see all of the deep water or water training. I don't even know what it's called, but I want you to walk us through it. Like the underwater moving heavy things type stuff. So can you talk us a little bit about kind of the more recent part of your athletic journey and what you've been up to?
Yeah. And I'll just say, like, I guess, what do you say? You or Jess?
Sad.
you have like ADHD with
sport attention deficit disorder.
Ooh, that's good.
You've never heard me say that before. I had that until I found jiu-jitsu win. And now I still like have a little bit of it, but yeah.
Well, I will say, like, unlike people who have a specialty and are trying to become the best at that one thing, like I guess I'm not that kind of athlete. So I'm definitely the individual who just loves to seek out ways that challenge my body and my mind in a lot of different ways. And I have really enjoyed being like in that newbie state of, hey, I don't know, I'm not good at this, but I'm excited to learn. And, you know, it's just like when you learn a new skill, or, I mean, I guess everyone here, you were saying, at least for you, Shannon, like you had you were dabbling in CrossFit for a bit. It's like one of the cool things about CrossFit is that there's so many things to master and like practice and get good at that. Like, it's just fun. Like even for however long you do it, there's just always something that you're not great at. And so it's fun to master those skills. And so I've just really leaned into and enjoyed trying to master new skills. And have that be a part of like my love of fitness and just that journey through life of just keeping things entertaining and making fitness fun and movement fun. And so, yeah, I kind of transitioned from triathlon into obstacle course racing into CrossFit. And going back to what Jason said earlier, I definitely had to periodize my training. Like once going from obstacle course racing into CrossFit, I realized, okay, all this running is going to have to take, like trail running, mountain running is going to have to take a backseat if I want to get good at CrossFit. So we just drank the CrossFit Kool-Aid for a couple years and it paid off. You know, we did go to the games on a team in 2018 and it was a lot of fun. And I got a lot stronger during that time frame because I wasn't trying to balance the two out. But you know, living in Utah, living in Salt Lake, I was just like, man, I'm just spending all these days in a gym and there's so much more out there. So getting into climbing and mountain biking, and like was so much fun. And then with the tactile games, I was doing still some stuff with Spartan. Spartan had some opportunities to like, they were putting on a couple different events that were multi-day, multi-domain as far as like different, disciplines. They had like a shooting competition, like a shooting and moving type competition, rucking, mountain biking, swimming. And so, you know, I felt like, okay, it's not about being the best at any one of those things. It's just about having a baseline level of proficiency in this. And so that was kind of became more of like my focus was being like a jack of all trades. And so I got into tactile games from that first Spartan competition. I'd never really seen shooting as like in a competitive space with fitness. And I was really intrigued by that. Also just having a husband who's in the military and a brother who's also in the military. It's like, I felt like I probably should, it probably wouldn't be the worst idea to have some sort of knowledge and proficiency and marksmanship. And I had always been terrified of firearms before then. So it's actually a very fun process and empowering process to learn more about, you know, weapon safety and then learning how to be proficient in it. And then also, you know, becoming a fairly decent shot. So I got into that. And of course, like that underlying component was like the heavy lifting, kind of like the CrossFit / endurance, kind of military type of physical training that they pair with shooting.
Krenik, can I ask you a question real quick about that?
Yeah.
So one of the sports that I've always been like amazed by is, and I feel like it's biathlon, right? Where you have the cross country skiers, right? And then they obviously cross country skiing is something that's very aerobic. And so their heart rate's up and then they have to stop and, you know, then perform in marksmanship, which is very like controlled and you have to focus. Is with the tactical games, is it kind of a similar setup where you're going from one event that's strength related or aerobic where you're, you know, using a lot of your anaerobic system, and then you have to go to marksmanship where obviously technical ability is key. And so you have to figure out how to control your heart rate and your breathing so you can perform there. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's absolutely that setup, except, you know, obviously biathlon's along a course, whereas like in the tactical games, there's a firing line and then all the work, all the physical capacity work is done on the other side of it so that we're not, you know, mixing up or you know, it's just to prioritize safety. But yeah, it's very much like you would be like, you know, doing something on the assault bike and then lifting a barbell up and carrying it across and doing several rounds of that. And then in between each round going up to the firing line and now having to shoot very small targets and be very accurate. And, you know, you're getting docked points with every miss. So like every shot matters and it's not about who's the fittest out there. And it's also not about who's just the best shot. It's a combination of the two. So, you know, you can't out fitness a bad, like a bad shot, essentially. But you also can't just rely on the shooting component to, you know, carry you through. But I really like, as you were describing, like having to control your breath, having to do something where you are, where you're anaerobic, as you said, and then have to really steal your breathing, because otherwise you're just shaking all over the place. Like you're using two different weapon systems. So there's a pistol and rifle, and you have to transition between the two. And, you know, you might be shooting out to 400 yards on with rifle, and these pistol targets, they're paper targets, but they might have like, they're maybe the size of quarters, and you're shooting, you know, 10, 15 yards. And you're just like really trying to steady the breath. So I thought that was a really cool, and is a really cool component to the tactical games. Is having to master your breath and control your heart rate, or at least know like, okay, I can't go all out on the fitness part because I'm going to need to, you know, I'm going to need to have a little bit more regulation when I get to the firing line.
Super cool. And so now like you have been doing, and I don't know where it came from, if it was like you were out in San Diego and got open to the water training, but can you talk to us a little bit about that? Cause that definitely has a huge breathing element.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's so fun to see that they're expanding nationwide, but it's called Deep End Fitness, and definitely got into it because it is out here. Actually, I was terrified to try it for the longest time. It just sounded like
I'm the kind of lady that pees in her pants a little bit when she does a flip turn. So
yeah, well, I hear you. It took probably a year to get myself to come to go to one class. And I still get nervous going to these classes. Like, you know, it's because I'm not, you know, you must be a really good swimmer. Like you must have a really good baseline breath holding ability. And I'm like, absolutely not. Like I felt like holding my breath for 30 seconds was outside of water. It's like that, you know, sometimes that would be the most I could do. So I didn't have any kind of skill set coming into this. But similarly felt like there was some really cool, crossover between like the breath control and the tactical game side of things, and you know, breath control underwater in it when you're very uncomfortable, and then just embracing the discomfort and getting very like just going to a place mentally. And this is where like the mental training has been really incredible as well, is just the place that you have to go to in your mind to shut off everything so that you're conserving as much oxygen as possible. And you know, like doing it underwater crossover, which is, you know, from one side of the pool to the other without breathing. Like you think you just want to go as fast as you can so that you can get from point A to point B with holding your breath for the least amount of time. But you realize like, wait, you actually to do this well, or to do this proficiently, and then maybe even go across back to the other side of the pool, is to stay really calm and really like powerful, but slow movements that are going to utilize the least amount of oxygen as possible. And I think just it's such a unique activity that we could all benefit from, and you could translate it to any, like really anything in life. So that's been a lot of fun to challenge myself.
Can we take a step back and kind of describe to the audience, and myself included, like what it looks like? Are we talking like Blue Crush carrying rocks under the ocean? Are we talking
Blue Crush? I love that you pulled Katie's that movie.
Out. Favorite movie.
I love that movie too.
Are we talking like Laird Hamilton doing flips with dumbbells? Like what are we kind of looking at visually here?
Oh, that's a great question. I should have started with that. But so they're 90 minute classes. And we usually start with some sort of like on the pool deck, some sort of like apneic breathing exercises to just kind of work on building that breath hold capacity. But most of this is all just like building comfort, building up your comfort level underwater, less about like trying to get this crazy workout in, as far as like, you know, it's not to leave you like breathless, but more so, well, I guess it does, but you know, it's more about breath control. But there's across the 90 minutes, there might be like four or five different workouts, starting with a warm up where we might do some bobs up and down, you know, like 10 bobs, and everyone's kind of at your own pace. So, you know, the instructor's going to collect everyone by the end of the time. So you know, if the warm up's 10 minutes and you get through one round of all the things and someone else gets through 10, like it's kind of CrossFit-y in that way of like everyone at their own pace. But we might do some bobs where we sink down to the bottom of the pool and come back up, and your hands are behind your back and your feet are together, and you can just kind of work on breath, like sinking down into the bottom of the pool. And all of this is done at the deep end of the pool. So the idea is that, I mean, every pool is going to be a little bit different, but you know, it might be as shallow as 7 feet. Especially for some of the beginners who are just jumping into these classes. But then some pools go down to like, you know, 15, 20 feet. And so some of the more advanced individuals will gravitate towards the deeper end of the pool. And so, yeah, you might be doing bobbing. You might be doing some underwater crossovers, which are just like, yeah, trying to get from, you know, one end of the pool to the other without breathing. We'll do some stuff on the pool deck to get your heart rate up and then jump back in. And you know, and then try to challenge yourself with increasing, you know, your breath hold capacity. But there's a lot of stuff on the bottom of the pool, like the dumbbells, the heavy sandbags. It's not about the weight though. Like, it's not like you're down there like, oh, this is so heavy. Like, everything is so buoyant in water, but it does keep you down at the bottom of the pool. So you're walking across the pool with holding the dumbbells or holding the sandbag, and you're in motion. And so it's kind of like this fine line of like, how quickly can I move to not be, you know, to get to the other side and maybe get to the other side and back, but also to conserve as much oxygen as possible. And, you know, you just come up when you need air. So it's not like every person's going to be so different and find a new level of pushing outside of their comfort zone than the next person. But that's what it's all about. It's just kind of that individual journey of embracing that over the course of this 90 minutes and, you know, pretty much ending the class with a much greater capacity for going without oxygen than when you started, and doing it in fun, creative ways where you're just like, I mean, you can't be anywhere else but in that present moment, or else that's going to be a really challenging class for you. So I don't know if I painted a great picture for you there, Jason, because it's so dynamic. But, you know, after the warm up, we might go into then like the instructors talking about what the next series of movements are going to be. A lot of partner stuff, a lot of, you know, quick grabbing breaths at the top and then coming back down and trying to go further, go longer underwater with various movements. But we do flips. It is fun. It is fun to do like some weighted backflips underwater and get a little disoriented down there, and like underwater tug of war and some fun games. They keep it pretty creative.
Playing in the pool, taking you back to the early days.
Yeah.
How has that worked? Like, I love hearing you describe, one, you know, each person's individual journey, but two, also that kind of sweet spot between obviously wanting to get across the pool. And in some ways you think faster is better, but also finding that area of efficiency where you're not going so fast that your need for oxygen is increased or your heart rate's increased so that you're going to have to end earlier. How has building that set like translated to other stuff you love to do?
Well, that's a great question. I think one is pacing like in any type of workout, you know, pacing yourself so that you can cover the distance or get through the entire workout. Like, you can't just go out so high. And so I think that that's, you know, that's been very applicable, but also like how you breathe throughout, you know, your workouts. Like, obviously when you're underwater, you are holding your breath, but when you're on the pool deck or when you're on the side at the edge of the pool, before you go into doing a long breath hold or trying to get, you know, down and back under the water on one breath, it's a lot about just like how you are, like, intentional breathing and breath work when you're at the surface. And which is hard to do when you're like out of breath and you come up from doing something that was really hard. And so it's like breath regulation. It's breathing through the nose. It's deep, forceful exhales. And honestly, I haven't done a ton of classes since being pregnant, but I did go a couple weeks ago, and I went exactly for that reason, was not to just like not put myself under, you know, any type of duress of like trying to max out any of my breath holds, but to really bring back becoming in tune with my breath and working on breathing techniques, because I do, you know, want to give birth naturally. And I do want to be really in tune with my body and my breathing. And so this was like, this doing deep end fitness has been like the best outlet for me to put that into practice. And I think in any sport or in anything that you're demanding a lot from your body and using a lot of oxygen, like how you take in air throughout, how you recover quickly between bouts, whether, you know, you're shooting or taking a quick rest, like it's all, whether you're, you know, going from a running and then going into an obstacle horse racing, like the breath is so key to all of that. And so I've seen it translate in a lot of different areas. But yeah, even now in pregnancy too, I need to channel that a little bit more on a regular basis.
Yeah, you made my transition for me, so thank you. Because I was just going to add, that was going to be my next question. Because breathing, you know, I have had two kids, and I would say like breathing was integral in, I think, I don't know, it's not making it through, but in that process of trying to make it as, I hesitate to use the word, as comfortable as possible, but, you know, just being able to work through it and let my body know what it needed, let my body do what it needed to do in order to birth a human being. And I feel like both in terms of controlling your heart rate and anxiety, but also being able to relax. And that's such a big part of the birthing process. Like, it seems like breathing would be integral. And I could see that being such a useful exercise beforehand. So cool. I want to dive into the fact that you are very pregnant and you're expecting soon. And it's been wonderful to follow your fitness and nutrition journey through your pregnancy. Can you talk us a little bit about what your training in nutrition has looked like? Maybe, I mean, it could be very close to what you do normally, but anything that you've been specifically intentional with.
Yeah. And just again, going off of like the breath work, it's been a lot of time under tension, like slowing down my movement. And I guess I should specify that most of my training throughout pregnancy has been very like strength training specific. I have included some, for sure, some cardio. I do a lot of walking. So a lot of gentle cardio, and then some intense bursts of, you know, whether it's sprint work or on the bike or rower. But I'm not doing a lot of like middle and long distance cardio. It's just not as fun when you're having to like stop to use the restroom every couple of minutes. But also I just feel like my body has been really embracing and loving the strength training. And I think it's been it's fun, I think, for anyone, but to feel strong and powerful, but especially as you're getting more and more, or especially as I've been getting more and more pregnant, to still feel very capable and strong throughout this time frame has been huge for me, just like obviously physically, but mentally as well. Like, yes, I can, you know, I am prepared for, like, I can do hard things, and I'm continuing to challenge my body in ways that I feel are safe, but still allowing me to progress in, you know, not progress from like a, I mean, I feel like I'm still pretty darn strong throughout this process, and I'm not trying to like achieve anything as far as like PBs and anything. It's more of like my outcome is having a successful childbirth and having that process go as well as it can, you know, for me and the baby. But yeah, it's been a lot of just slowing down the eccentric loading phase of movements, like taking some extra load off as a result of that, like that slower kind of tempo style format of lifting. It really allows me to make sure that my form's in check, which, you know, especially with back and midsection being challenged with the way I'm carrying the baby, like that's obviously something that we want to be really focused on. And so I feel like, yeah, when it's squatting, if I'm doing a really slow squat or pausing at the bottom, or same with a deadlift, that I have ample opportunities throughout that throughout that eccentric phase to check in and make sure that I'm engaging my core and my glutes and my hamstrings properly to make it a safe movement. And I found a lot of really great or really positive strength effects from doing it that way, and taking out a lot of high intensity. Like that feels like cardio to me when I'm doing like these slow strength movements. I am gassed afterwards, and I'm enjoying my rest time in between, and I don't feel like I need to like do a 20 minute conditioning piece afterwards to benefit.
I think the strength training through pregnancy is a really important part of, like you said, the mental piece of feeling strong and capable, and also, you know, coming back from pregnancy and having that strong muscle mass and that, you know, the ability to go through a very intense experience. Your body can handle it a lot more when you're strong. So good for you for doing that. I'm curious, on a lighter note, we went through, my wife was pregnant last summer, and I always get a kick out of like funny food cravings or funny like obsessions. For us, it was Rice Krispie treats made with Fruity Pebbles.
Oh, my God.
That was pretty funny. But do you have anything cool or kind of out there that's silly or out of character for you, or that you were craving?
You know, I don't know if it's out of character, but definitely enhanced is like, I love sour gummies and like sour candy. And there was a phase, it was kind of short-lived, but I just remember like sitting on the couch with my husband, or he was sitting on the couch and I think I was in the kitchen, and I was just like, do you want to go to the gas station and get some sour punch straws with me? And the way he looked at me was just like, I've been waiting for this day for you to be like, can we go get some, like, he's like the sweet tooth guy. And so I just remember him being like getting up right away and be like, let's go right now.
Yeah.
So the sour candy, but I've always been a sucker for sour candy, but it was just funny where I was like, I think I need that right now.
Did you have any aversions?
Gosh, early on, like really early on, this was before my husband left for deployment, which was around like 14 weeks. So this was before that. But I think just like opening up my fridge and looking at like the leftovers, I was just like, or like the thought of cooking meat, that was not appealing to me. And so fortunately he just kind of would make dinner and then put it in front of me, and I'd be like, okay, now I can eat that. But like beforehand, it would almost be like, I don't think I want to eat anything. So that was a little bit of like a couple weeks span of like just not really wanting food, but being hungry, but just nothing sounded good. And then the bagel and cream cheese, that has been a go-to for sure over time. Just, it's like that never steers anyone wrong, I feel like, or at least a pregnant woman wrong. But outside of that, it hasn't been too many crazy things. And I think maybe because it's just me at home, so it's like, I don't even have, like, if I were craving something, I'd have to actually like do something about it, drive it, instead of being like, hey babe, you think you can grab this for me or pick this up? So maybe that's contributing to it, where I'm just like, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit boring, or back to my like kind of usual intake. But so that was more so early on. But I've had a very, very smooth pregnancy, I will say. Like no nausea, no vomiting, no And maybe it's because I'm having a boy. I don't know. I know that sometimes the girls are a little bit harder on the mom sometimes, or maybe, you know, I like to think that maybe just taking care of my body, although, you know, I never want anyone to feel like that, well, because they have a bunch of, they're undergoing a lot of nausea or pregnancy sickness, that they're doing anything wrong. I definitely don't think that's the case, but it's been very fortunately smooth for me, and I've had not a ton of hiccups in this process.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to hear that. I think everybody's different. And even within an individual, like, pregnancies can be different. I know my first and second were vastly different just in terms of how I felt. But my first trimester, I always thought it was hilarious. Like, I was like, all I want is buttered noodles and like a salad, which I usually love. Like, not like a light salad. We're talking like a heavy salad, lots of bits. I'm all about that. But you couldn't. I was like, that was the last thing I wanted. And I'm like, well, I should be eating really healthy food right now. I think my body was just like, we want fat. we want it quickly.
Well, real quick on that, Shannon, I was very proud of my winter garden bed here in San Diego. And I like planted all lettuce. I was like, because we eat so much lettuce. It's an easy thing to, you know, Taylor and I have tons of big salads every night. And I was like, why? Like, you know, that's a great first thing to start growing. And I swear all of the heads like popped up in these first few weeks of pregnancy, and you couldn't pay me to eat the salad for the first several months.
I'm like, glad it wasn't just me.
I felt so, it was like so frustrating because it was beautiful salad and I was just giving it away. I was like, I can't eat a salad right now. It's not what I want.
Give me a bagel. Give me cream cheese. Let's go.
Well, beyond the like funny things, anything intentional that you've tried to focus on with nutrition around pregnancy, both to support, obviously, the growing of another human, but also all of the activity that you've been able to do while pregnant?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was thinking about this before our call because I think a lot of people have asked me that, of like, well, okay, what's changed, what's shifted? And I think the first thing I'll say is like the foundations have been very much the same as what it was beforehand. And I think, you know, for some people, it's very, like, there's a big shift, because for one reason or another, but I think I do think the foundations and the core elements of quality nutrition are pretty across the board similar, no matter what your goals really are, or no matter what stage of life you're in. And then there's like little things that kind of shift to support, you know, growing a new life versus like aging or going through, you know, menopause or perimenopause. But it's like those patterns and habits like are going to serve you across the board if you're, you know, focusing on consistent, well-rounded meals throughout the day, you know, getting a high quality, you know, lean sources of protein and complex carbs and lots of color and you know, a lot of like variety in your diet and healthy fats. And so those really haven't, that really hasn't changed. But of course, going from my more like competitive seasons of, you know, where I'm training kind of higher volume and doing more intensity or longer sessions, of course, like those energy demands were higher then. And so focusing on less like energy dense performance focused fuels. So, you know, thinking about just like getting carbs on board, getting quick carbs on board, quick digesting carbs that I'm going to be using right away in my training. That hasn't been as much of an emphasis because my training sessions are shorter. I'm, you know, working at lower intensities and doing a lot of like just gentle kind of movement throughout my day. So I think just more of a balanced approach of like, you know, obviously focusing on protein intake. For me, I unfortunately dairy doesn't love me. And so trying to, you know, increase protein intake a bit during this, you know, because I am still training or still working out and growing another human. So I already have like high protein needs as an athlete, but then, you know, obviously creating and growing a new life increase a bit more for that. Fiber was one, especially in that the first trimester where it was like, what's going on in my body? Like, this baby's the size of a poppy seed. And all of a sudden my like GI system's not operating the way it used to. And so, you know, really focusing on high fiber foods, hydrating well. The gnarly hydrate has been like my saving grace, like over the course of my pregnancy, just to kind of like water just doesn't always do it for me. So getting different forms of hydration, lots of healthier fats. And that's something like I encourage a lot of my athletes too, where, you know, depending on their season of the year, whether they're like peak performance race season versus base building versus like, you know, if they're you know, in a really heavy training block, like, you know, nutrition isn't always static. So I'm not always going to just be pushing like incredibly high carbohydrate intake and lower fat and moderate protein. It's like, there's different time frames where we pull back on the carbs a little bit to include more like healthy fats, if that hasn't been as much of an emphasis for them. So I feel like I'm kind of, in a similar light, like this season for me is like less extreme on on crushing the simple carbohydrates, right? And more so like, okay, let me make sure I'm getting enough omega-3 fats and, you know, eating more eggs for the choline content and, you know, in the baby's development, but then also, you know, but also focusing on high fiber complex carbohydrates. And so I think those have been kind of like the foundations of my like pregnancy nutrition. And then with meals and snacks, like my meals stay consistent. We might just adjust portions of what's on that plate based off of what my needs are that day. And then snacks, as I mentioned earlier, like snacks are oftentimes like my maybe pre or post-workout or fueling into training in the past. Whereas now it's like they're bridging gaps between my meals and they can just be a little bit more well-rounded. Like I'm not thinking about like, okay, I'm going to do this workout and I'm going for 2 hours. And so this is how my snack needs to be shaped in order to best support that effort. It's more of like, what do I need? What didn't I do? Like if I had a bagel and cream cheese for breakfast, I'm probably missing some things. So I should probably like fill in those gaps with my, like what I choose at my snacks.
You alluded to this earlier when you were talking a little bit about how some of the breathing work you did with the water training might carry over to the birth experience. Mm-hmm. I've always thought, I'm like, man, if there was never an endurance event, it's birth, right? And like nutrition and hydration and potentially fueling and electrolytes, like, you know, some birth experiences, like my first one was like 19 hours. Like they can definitely venture into that like endurance realm, but then complicated by the fact that often when you're in that, like you don't really always want to eat or you don't really always want to drink. How have you been thinking about like how you're going to fuel and hydrate your body during birth, especially given, you know, your very well established career in nutrition and as an athlete?
That's such a great point. And even though, Shannon, like we're coming up, we're getting under that, like getting close to that 1 month out mark, but thinking about, yeah, like packing not only my hospital bag, but also like my snack bag, because I don't go anywhere without packing my snacks. And so thinking about, or just like packing food. And so thinking about like, yeah, what variety is key, of course, because yeah, it's just like when you're in any type of endurance event, you don't know what your body, like, you don't know what you're going to be craving. Like, is it going to, do I just all want sweet stuff? Do I need a mix of sweet and savory? And so I imagine it'll be like a hodgepodge of different food options to hit, depending on what I'm feeling, what mood I'm in. But I will definitely be, I mean, unless I'm taken off caught off guard, I will be packing a cooler with like, you know, maybe some different overnight oat options, some maybe dates and like chia pudding, or like maybe might take my sourdough with me, who knows. But
dates can induce pregnancy, we learned that.
Yeah, no, I gotta be,
I gotta eat those dates.
I've been making like those homemade Snicker bars where you put like the peanut butter or like walnuts in the middle of the date and then drizzling chocolate.
Oh, I haven't tried that yet.
That sounds awesome.
That does sound good. Awesome.
Okay, well, I'll make a reel on that, Shannon.
Yeah, I mean, I need that, I think, in my life right now. That sounds amazing.
No, but that's a great point though, Shannon. I do think like the food prep, I mean, some people really, again, you don't know when you're going to go into labor, I guess, but having some food on hand that you can just take with you and round out your fueling strategy. I've thought about that. I'm like, am I going to want to eat? Or like if something happens early in the morning, they always say to like, make sure, like before you go to the hospital, unless it's urgent, like get a meal in, like make sure that you're not mm-hmm. doing this potentially like 24 plus hour event, not fueled or, you know, with very little in your stomach. So,
yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with not knowing what you're going to like. Cause I remember, yeah, I just remember my husband being like, banana, you want to, I was like, that is the last thing on earth I want right now. Thank you for offering it. But it's amazing what looks good versus what doesn't. And it's very much like middle of, you know, an endurance run or bike ride can kind of be in the same place where you don't know what your body's going to want. But like the emphasis on hydration, on electrolyte replacement, on getting in some carbs, because it is an athletic achievement to birth a human being.
Yeah, no. And I think that's such a good, like, I don't think a lot of people prepare. I think that's sometimes probably the last thing that women are thinking about on their birth, like actual birth and labor prep. So here we're making that known.
Yes.
I would encourage your husband to think about this as well, because I went in knowing we'd be there for a couple of days and I'm like, I eat a lot. And I'm assuming your husband eats a lot and hospital food kind of sucks.
Good point, Jason.
And so like, tell your husband, like plan, dude, you bring a lot of food because you want your brain to work. And you know, it's a pretty intense experience, even though you're not actively birthing a child for the man, but you're concerned. Him to bring some food. Yeah. Like, yeah, I brought a feedback for myself.
Yeah.
I'm glad I did.
Full of sour straws.
Yep.
No, Jason, thanks for that reminder. Cause I honestly probably would have just been like, what do I need? Not my husband. He's over here like dropping the ball on the coaching side of things because he didn't have any food. So
yeah, a little hangry, you know,
a little hanger in there. Yeah. Yeah. He's like, babe, I gotta go get something. And then I'm like, wait, right now. So good to have some options.
Is there anything nutritionally that you've had to kind of pull out of your diet through pregnancy? Like obviously sushi or, you know, caffeine, lattes, red wine, whatever it is. Is there anything you're looking forward to on the back end of this, like that you're kind of excited for?
You know, I've been doing sushi, but mostly like the tempura, like shrimp or just probably the less healthy sushi options, but because it's fully cooked through. But I will look forward to sushi, and I will look forward to like deli meats or just having a nice deli sandwich or something. Or I think I've been heating up some deli meat on occasion. Like if I really want a sandwich, I'm like, I guess I just heat this up and we're okay. But but yeah, no, there's like we've got some good sandwich shops around here. But outside of that, not really. I've actually not a coffee drinker. Don't really take in much caffeine. I'm not, don't drink alcohol. So I haven't had to sacrifice a ton compared to maybe what, for some women, it's been a little bit easier on me in that regard.
Karina, I'm curious, like you post a lot of great videos on the socials on Instagram, and some of those are training, some of those are nutrition. I feel like for a lot of women, pregnancy can be this vulnerable period where either, not saying you're in this case, but other women might be like susceptible to some misinformation out in the world, or a lot of people have opinions about what you should or shouldn't be doing with training, or what you should or shouldn't be doing with nutrition. First question is, has anybody like entered into your space trying to be critical of maybe of something you've done, or have you had women reaching out to ask questions based on how you've shared your Instagram or your experience on Instagram?
Yeah, I will say, fortunately, there's been a lot of individuals who have just, you know, come into my space and just more so like, wow, it's thanks for sharing this, or that's really, you know, motivating or inspiring, and less of the critics of like, why are you doing that? I almost feel like if you're it's just so interesting. I mean, I think that when you have to keep in mind like your baseline of fitness going into this pregnancy, anyone's pregnancy journey, and just recognizing like what's comfortable for you, or what's like what's normal for you versus what's not, and going off of that. And I think, you know, a woman's and a mother or a mother to be's intuition is usually a pretty good gauge to go off of. And so, you know, there'd be some things like burpees, for example, where people would be like, you know, are you supposed to, you know, it's like, that makes me nervous or this and that. And it's like, I'm not slamming my belly into the ground. Like my knees are touching first, I'm lowering down. Like I would know, but like, I think one of the biggest things that I've experienced just firsthand in pregnancy is like your body will absolutely tell you that, hey, this doesn't feel very comfortable, or like that's painful. Like you're not going to do that, you know? So I think that just what your body's telling you is a great gauge for that. Obviously talking with your provider, but I thought it was really cool when I was talking to my midwife, and she was just like, you know, I assumed I couldn't do deep end, like underwater fitness or this and that. And she was like, oh, like if you've been, you know, whatever your comfort level is, like, she's like, you might not be able to hold your breath very long, 'cause that baby's taking a lot of your oxygen too. But you know, she was just like, you're not off. Nothing's off limits for you. And just listen to your body and make sure that, you know, you're approaching your fitness from not like a kind of like self-serving standpoint. It's more of like, okay, it's us, it's not about just me, but it's, you know, my top priority is making sure this baby's healthy and I'm caring for it the best way possible. And so I think that, and how can that not be your focus as like, I think any mom to be or any pregnant woman is going to like, you have this constant reminder that it's not about you.
It's hard
you
to forget.
Yeah. So fortunately it's been quite a supportive space. But also like, you know, I also recognize if someone's going to say something, it's like, yeah, well, we have a very different experience or fitness levels or baselines, and not in like, I'm not saying that in like a cocky way. It's just like, I appreciate your concern, but you know, even my mom or like, like her friends or something, it's like, I'm sure that feels or seems strange for you or very like out of the norm, because I'm sure, you know, when they were my age, that probably was not something that they saw very often. So, you know, I take it with a grain of salt, and it's like, all right, well, thank you for your concern, and I'm just going to keep doing me. So
yeah, it's coming from a good place, but you know, please feel confident that I like the way you summed it up. Like I'm doing this for both of us, and I know where I started and how my body feels, and I'm listening to it. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that makes a ton of sense.
Karina, you mentioned some of the modifications you've made to training. You're focusing more on strength training, kind of gentle motion. You've eliminated some of those longer duration, kind of moderate intensity endurance bouts. What have you tweaked in your programming for like recovery? Have you added anything? Have you taken away anything to kind of optimize recovery between workouts as, you know, you progress into pregnancy?
Yeah, I would say like one, very much like just me getting up and going to the gym is like the way I want to start my day. And I've from day one, I was like, I don't know how this journey's going to go and what this is going to be like. And, you know, I might have to completely change up my approach to you know, training and nutrition are my expectations. So I kind of just went in with like no expectations other than like, hey, let's make this a part of our, let's keep this a part of our morning routine so that I can show up for myself and whatever I have to give that day or, you know, whatever I feel like doing, I'll do it. And I'll be proud that I got myself there. But outside of that, like we have no, there's nothing I need to do. And so, you know, keeping the training sessions pretty short, but intentional, it keeps it fun. And, you know, I can adjust the intensity based off of like what my energy levels are like, but I've really enjoyed kind of keeping the first part of my day when my energy is actually like, you know, the best, or when I'm just like, I don't even have time to think about what my energy status is at. It's just like, I'm at the gym. And then if I feel tired later, that's kind of my time. You know, the sun's out, the afternoon's a great time to just go for a walk, or the evening just to get some gentle movement in. And that's been serving me really well as like this combination of, you know, some strength training, shorter, somewhat kind of punchy conditioning pieces a couple times per week, if that feels right for me. But then also just having really like quieter times in my day where it's just like getting outside, getting some sun on my face, getting some easy walking in. And really, I just started early on taking the weekends, like just Saturday, Sunday, completely off. Normally I'll do like, you know, maybe a Thursday, Sunday, or like have at least one full rest day and then another one where I might do something, do some other form of like lower intensity activity. But what has just worked for me is like Monday through Friday, like staying in my routine of like, you know, get up at a certain time, go to the gym, come back, do work, walk in the evenings. And then the weekends are just like my time to like recharge. And I, even if I feel like I don't need to take that rest, I'm just doing it for like my mental health, my well-being of like catching up on reading that I want to do for birth prep, or just like setting up the nursery, or spending time with girlfriends, or being alone and just having quiet time that I will probably never get back. So it's just been, so Saturday, Sunday has just been like a nice just window for me to just, hey, whatever I need. And it's helped me feel really good starting the week on Mondays and feeling energized. So I'm definitely a big advocate of taking rest before your body's like, hey, we need to rest. And I think across the board, that's for my athletes as well. It's like, if they're not having, they don't have a rest day, or they're only taking it when they feel like they need it, it's going to be a little bit too late.
I'm taking notes. Heard.
Yeah. I like it.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. Yeah. I like your approach to kind of balancing feel and structure. Like we're talking about this for through your lens of, you know, your journey through pregnancy and balancing training. Like it's a really interesting concept of like, how do you feel today versus sticking to a structured training plan? I'm curious, does that same approach kind of translate into your work with your clients?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cause it's, you know, it's this blend of like, you know, it's so important to be in touch and in tune with our bodies. And that's a skill that I cover, all the time with my clients. It's in all the work that we do is like, well, what are you, yes, you've got these gadgets, you've got these things that are telling you where you're at and what your scores are, but it's like, let's not lose touch with our ability to sense or read the signs or read the cues that our bodies are giving us. Because we know that those, you know, that technology can be misleading. It can be off. It can be inaccurate. And, you know, if why, you know, we shouldn't rely heavily on those things and as like a gauge of where we're at. And so I think that recognizing like what to look for, what to listen to, but at the same time, we have to recognize that depending on what we're going through in life, that those signals can be off. And so we need to have anchor points in our day that, you know, or we need to use logical reasoning or know what we, or lean on what we know through like sports nutrition that, hey, just because I don't feel like I need something doesn't mean that I don't need it. So we need to be able to override some of that intuition at times or what we're sensing to make the smarter decision for us in the longer term. And so that can be like, you know, pre-workout, you know, like, or post-workout is a perfect example of like post-workout nutrition, where a lot of people's appetites are suppressed after certain, you know, certain activities. And so it's like, well, I just finished a 2-hour run. I'm not hungry, but if I think about this, like kind of logically, like I haven't eaten in 3 hours and, it's probably time to give my body some fuel, or, you know, I know that like, even though I don't feel like it now, can I find something that tastes remotely good or that I could kind of get my head around consuming, whether it's liquid calories or something just hyper palatable so that I can start giving my body like jumpstarting the recovery process. And so with pregnancy, recognizing that, you know, we don't need to lean into every single craving that we have just because we have it. But also it's like, there might be times where we don't feel like eating, but it's dinner time and we haven't eaten since lunchtime, or maybe an afternoon snack. And it's like, hey, it's not always about like that I don't feel hungry right now. It's like, I have me to take care of and a baby to take care of. And if I go to bed right now, I'm skipping dinner. And it's like, that's not like a healthy pattern to get into. We don't want to like meal skip even for ourselves. And so we're not eating for two, but we're not just eating for one. I like, so it's like interesting. You hear that all the time. It's like, oh, like you're eating for two, or you hear a lot of people correct that and be like, hey, you're not eating for two. Like, you know, it's kind of a gradual build as you're going throughout pregnancy. And, you know, it's like one big person and one little person, but at the same time, it's not like we do have increased needs. And so we need to be aware of that. And again, sometimes we need to be thinking like what I want versus what I need are going to look a little bit differently. We have to override at times.
Yeah, I think that was such a good explanation, both from kind of the purely athletic side and also from the pregnancy side, because often, yeah, you may not feel like eating, but if you look at your patterns overall, it might be the time to eat, to refuel your body, to get it ready for what you're about to do or to recover from what you just did. So that was a great explanation.
Yeah. And also one thing I'll just add to that is like, then being able to read your body's cues and signals, like, let's say you don't eat dinner one night, you're like, man, I'm just not hungry. And, you know, that happens. We're not perfect. We don't need to be perfect with our nutrition. But like, then the next day, if you're like, oh my gosh, I am dragging, like I have no energy. Like I usually work out in the mornings and I'm like, man, I did not, like, it feels like I didn't fuel last night. It's like, obviously, because you just, so, but, you know, my whole point of like being able to be in tune with your body, but also to recognize like the patterns and habits or the things that you did previous, like leading up to that point, and be like, all right, I'm connecting the dots. I feel like crap this morning, or I'm not able to get a great workout on because I skipped this dinner last night. Hopefully that will reinforce your habits to like not do that, or be able to the next time you're in that position be like, well, I'm not really hungry for dinner, but I remember last time I did this, you know, and I don't want that to impact tomorrow morning's workout. So maybe I'll at least have like a little bedtime snack or something.
I can't relate to any of that. I'm just sitting here. I'm like, there are people out there who aren't hungry after work. I'm like, that's not me.
I think the hard part in pregnancy is like, especially in this third trimester, is like, I'll be hungry, but I have no room in my stomach where I'm like, I'm so uncomfortably full.
Yeah.
That
there's nowhere to put it.
It's a hard feeling being hungry and not being able to eat, being like, okay, I need to wait, or I need to have a little something. I need to wait for like another hour or two, and then I can have another little something. Cause otherwise you're just like, it feels like your stomach's in your chest.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of space in there.
Not a lot of space. And then your belly is just like, it's already feels like it's going to pop. And then it's like, how could this feel any bigger than it does? So, so yeah, there's that aspect too right now.
Corinna, if you could give one piece of advice to athletes that are preparing for pregnancy or in the midst of it, what would it be?
Yeah, gosh, I think that with this, like when you're saying preparing for pregnancy, it's like, it takes me back to, or like,
yeah, I want to get pregnant. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it takes me back to that those days, which like, this was not a walk in the park for us. And, you know, like in the grand scheme of things, we weren't trying for that long, but it felt, you know, it was kind of on and off, but it felt like eternity. And you just go through these emotional highs and lows of, you know, you track in your cycle maybe. And then like every month you're hopeful. And then you just feel like this crushing, defeat, like every time, you know, you realize like it wasn't a successful, you know, like, no, it's going to be another month. So I hope, you know, I'm very sensitive to people in that process, because like, I know it's fun to be on this other side where I'm like, I have this baby in me, and I know like we're going to, God willing, have this baby here in a month or so. But like that time frame, like I never want to forget how that time frame felt, and just be really sensitive to the people around me. But also just to recognize, like, being kind to yourself, being, you know, sharing that feeling or those feelings with your friends, with your significant other, like bringing them in. One of my friends told me, like, don't just carry that burden with you, like each month, that like disappointment and that emotion, like share that with your partner to help bring him into the loop on how you're feeling. Because they don't, you know, the guy doesn't really go through that necessarily all the time. And you know, it's easy to feel like, gosh, something must be wrong with me. And so I remember, and just, I guess my advice piece here, and it might not work for necessarily everyone, but like, don't be afraid to change things up based off of like what you're, you know, I think we all stick with like what we're familiar with and what we know. And especially as athletes, it's hard to let go of like that athlete side of us, especially in these early phases of like thinking about starting your family. But for me, like this past winter, like I had my last big event in October, November of last year. And for the winter, I was like, okay, what are my priorities right now? My priorities are on like starting a family. It's not on being like the fittest person, like, you know, being at my peak physical fitness and being gentle with my body and adjusting my fitness and my workout and my intensity to potentially make myself more viable for this pregnancy. Is like, that sounds like it might have to be, you know, something that I lean into. And so, and it was, and so, and that's when kind of we found success. And we know that, you know, being in like low energy availability or just putting additional stress on the body can make it you know, more challenging. Your body's not going to necessarily be in a position where it's like, yes, let's invite a whole other life, you know, on board when we're already struggling to maybe support the energy needs of this active individual. So I think that would probably be, there's probably a much more concise way to say what I just said, but I think just recognizing like, okay, what are the priorities now? Being able to step back from what we know and feel most comfortable with as athletes, which is like pushing ourselves and going hard, and being able to have a gentler phase of life, both on the exercise fitness side of things and nutritionally too. Like, I might need to eat a little bit more. I might need to reduce my training session to an hour instead of two or three.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Also just like mental stresses, and just look at what those stressors are in your life. And like you said, be gentle with yourself and listen to your body and figure out what you need to support yourself. And you know, it is a wonderful thing to be able to get pregnant, and it can be an uphill battle for a lot of people and stressful for a lot of people. So I love that you brought awareness and attention to that. I think that speaks like super well to just who you are as a person, Karina, like always open, always approachable, and just always a lot of fun. And I've appreciated your friendship, and I'm super psyched to hear you guys might be moving back to Salt Lake. So maybe we can ride bikes and you can teach me some of those underwater breathing exercises. But if our audience wants to find you and your nutrition expertise, or just follow along with your story, can you let them know where to find you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably most active on social media. So I'm the RD Athlete on social media, and the RDAthlete.com for my website. But yeah, I love getting messages. I love learning like what people are most interested in about nutrition and performance and pregnancy. This is an exciting time, and hopefully it just helps me to connect even deeper with a larger audience and population. But yeah, there's definitely some things that I have available to help prospective clients if they're interested, even during this maternity timeframe, but also have another dietitian on board as well, Davin. So
we love Davin. Sweet.
Yeah. So we've got a little bit of a team, which is exciting. And so yeah, reach out anytime, and I've got some links in my bio too for other resources as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. Karina, thanks for being so like open and transparent. And it's a really, really nice to chat with you and kind of peek behind the curtain a little bit. And I can say I have about a year head start on you with the baby, and it's freaking rad. So just like buckle up, because it's fucking awesome in all the coolest ways. So
thank you. Well, I'm excited for all the Utah Salt Lake City adventures, and we're building a little biker gang out with our with our family. So that'll be fun.
Hell yeah. Well, we are going to get you a Gnarly Nutrition Care package in the mail. We'll definitely make sure there's some hydrate in there. But thanks so much for joining us on the Gnarstool. This has been rad.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Gnarstool Podcast.
Something the science.